Hello, everybody. We have a fantastic show for you today. Mobat is back on the mic, and I'm really excited for you to get into that. Just up front here at the top of the show, a little reminder, if you have fun with the show, if you like what I do online, or you like listening to this, we make you laugh, it's no better time than the present to please go to wherever you're listening to this podcast, if it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever, give us a rating, a review, a comment. It really helps the algorithm boost our show up to new listeners so that we can keep growing this artsy fartsy family and eventually maybe try and, you know, make more of a living off of this. Because right now, this is always just straight out of the love of our hearts. And if we can grow this more together, then we can maybe get some ad sponsorships and actually like put money back into this and make it a bigger show. Maybe make it into like a video show. We could always take polls or take votes to adjust it to whatever you guys would like to see. But we need more support to do it. So if you have fun, if you like the show, that's free to do, and it's a great time to do it. Also, if you want to support me or the show in a different way, you can always go to the show notes. There is a link to get the official Jordan Prince hot sauce. It ships internationally. It's delicious. It's like a really special thing to me. It took a long time to make. It's like really, I love it. If you love actually hot sauce, get it. And if you want to just support me and have my little pretty face on the shelf, get it. Give it to a friend. All right, guys, let's get into it. Thank you so much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to an all-new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, when we have, once again, our favorite recurring guest and previously all-time guest, co-partner, co-creator, Moritz Batscheider is back on the show today.
Hello, it is great to be back with you here.
Dude, how was your week? How's the news cycle looking on your end, given all the stuff that's going on with a new American president?
Yeah, like, that's a lot, man. There's a lot coming from your end, quotation mark, like a lot from the States right now. And it's, yeah, like people, like I feel like generally maybe politicians, journalists, everyday people, everyone is just trying to figure out like how serious all these things are. And we're back at where we were before, like Biden, where you'd never know like what kind of things does he actually mean? What does he actually want to do, and what's just show? And we're back there. Like, looking back at it, we did this episode around the election in 2020.
That's right.
And then I remember this wrong, but I remember, like, not us, but generally the vibe was with people who are not necessarily Republicans, especially in Europe, because there are Republicans here. There's an organization, Republicans Overseas, but that's another story. There was this kind of vibe like, okay, this crazy period is over, and now we're back to normal. Like, just in terms, I'm not talking political parties, just the way a president like
behaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially on the international stage.
Yeah.
And we're like back to normal, etc. And now everyone is like, maybe this was just like a little, like, breathing pause.
Like a little calm before the storm.
This Biden administration. And now we're back. I don't know. How do you? We start with the light and easy topics.
I feel similar to, I hear my own sentiment repeated pretty commonly in like the videos I watch about this, either from news commentators or just, you know, fellow exhausted civilians. But it is meant to overwhelm you. Like, I mean, that's even, I mean, I don't know if you remember that old interview with Steve Bannon, the 2019 one, where he talked about loading the media.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what they're doing. And you could have a full like 2-hour discussion about any number of the like atrocious things that he's claiming he wants to do, like really intense things. All of them would be worthy of like a deep dive. And that's the point. Like, all of these things are just crowding every single outlet. So definitely it's exhausting. Definitely. And it's easy to to look at that stuff, and I think it's very easy to either like get so absorbed into it that you can't focus on anything else, and you could get depressed, or you could get really anxious, or the exact opposite. It's also very easy when stuff like this happens to completely step away and like completely distance yourself, and neither one of those is really the solution, I think. It's hard to find a balance.
Yeah, that's something, and to get back on a personal level, because you asked, that's something that's which I'm trying to do, especially throughout the last weeks, because I don't think it's helpful for yourself and for society to completely, I don't know, isolate yourself from news and what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But I had to learn since, I don't want to sound weird, but I handle news like 8 to 10 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and I had to learn to turn it off when getting home after work.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty strict with that throughout the past few weeks, because there's a lot going on, and it's, I feel like it's good for my mental health and everything, just to, I don't know.
I feel like especially for a
just like for you, it's probably a good idea at night to just not open TikTok.
Oh, totally, dude. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too, is there's in addition to the news being so like taking up so much of your mental space throughout the day, then there is always the apps that are so interested in your eyeballs and your attention as well. I think it's harder than ever to have that balance of where do I spend my mental time? Like where do I spend my what do I give my mental health to? Like what space do I put it in? Do I put it into listening to songs? Okay, well maybe not. Maybe I'll watch a video. Maybe I'll try to read something. Oh, who am I kidding? Oh, maybe I'll just check this real quick. And before you know it, you've like doom scrolled TikTok for 2.5 hours.
But I meant this more on a personal level, just because you and I are like in different direction, but both like work in fields.
I see.
That everybody has a connection to, kind of. I mean, like most people watch news, probably completely different channels, but like they do it.
Yeah.
And most people are on Instagram and are on TikTok, and because that's something you know from your life before you actually professionally like work in this field. And do you struggle with like distancing yourself from that, since you're not just on social media for fun, but it's like your business model?
I think getting into it for business has made it harder for me to step away from it as entertainment. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally a curse, because I can try to convince myself that I'm scanning for ideas. I can lie to myself and say, oh, well, there's a few creators who I enjoy. They always have some kind of different approach to a skit. I'll just kind of scroll around and see if something pops up that I can apply to my niche. But then I end up, just watching anything that pops up on the screen, and all of a sudden it's been 2 hours, and it's like, man, what am I doing? I haven't left this sofa. I haven't been outside. And then I'll just get so frustrated with myself. It's definitely harder than ever, I think, for me personally to step away. I had to even get an app that shuts off my apps for like chunks of the day.
Like the, what's it called?
Something Locker. I think there's a few different kinds of them.
There was an app that was super cool. I don't remember the name.
Let me see what this
was. But it was like, especially for like Instagram and other social media apps.
Yeah.
And it had you do little quests before you open the app.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and the quest could either be like hold your breath for a certain amount of time, or rotate your phone 6 times or something. And these exercises make you think, do I actually want to be on the app right now?
Right.
Or not. And the cool thing is, I don't want to make this an advertisement, but as far as I got it, this app was created by some university students.
Uh-huh.
And actually was part of like like they were trying to they were working on something on human behavior on OneSec. It's called OneSec, and it's like,
oh, that's cool.
They're using the data to learn more about like human behavior with these kind of apps and what they do.
I like that. Maybe I'll check that one out too, because the one I have is really straightforward. The only hiccup to getting on the app that you feel like you want to get on is just going through to the back page of your app icon list and opening up that extra app to personally unlock it. So it's not. I like the this one second one sounds way more like inventive. because this is really just a lock switch button. And you can set like hours of the day. I tend to like just leave them off until I'm, well, I mean, I'm not doing a great job of it, but my goal was to leave them off until I need to make a video.
Yeah.
And then I can like, reward myself with some scrolling time after I've made the video, but then it locks up again. Like I try not to, my goal, especially with TikTok, because for some reason, YouTube, I don't see it as big of an issue because I have premium. So I listen to things, like I listen to videos too. And sometimes it's just like a podcast. Like I'll listen to like news, comedy things, like with the screen off. So for me, I don't mind YouTube so much in the morning, but TikTok is really bad in the morning. Like first thing in the morning, it hurts your brain. It hurts your eyes. It kind of makes you feel really sad and like lethargic. So I use that app for specifically not having access to TikTok at least until, late morning or closer to lunch. I try to do that.
I get that. But because I feel the same thing with like with the field I work in, that it's even if you enjoy or especially when you enjoy what you do and you work in a field where you already had a connection to privately before you did that, it makes it even more easier just to spend time with certain topics and to, I don't know, get lost.
Yeah. I was thinking about this yesterday, just in terms of how jobs have to incorporate social media. Like there just aren't jobs that can't incorporate that. I mean, there's even pages for like some park recreation office in Idaho has an Instagram. You know, like everything's kind of involved with that now. And I was thinking about how, I was looking at musicians in particular, and two thoughts came to mind. Was like, one is there's a wave of popular artists that kind of missed or like, successfully avoided needing to promote themselves on social media. Like they have like people who post clips of their music videos for them, or they have like a team that handles that, because you kind of have to have social media, but you can tell that they are not on it. You can tell that they don't care, and they're not involved unless their agency asks them to make a video like, hey guys, thanks for the, we won a Grammy or whatever. Like Kendrick Lamar, for example, like he does not use Instagram. I guarantee he does not sit there and scroll. He might be shown a video now and then, but I guarantee he's not wasting his time. And for his channel, like, of course there's channels for him, but because there has to be, so people post for him. That's the first thought I had, how I kind of wish I had been in a creative field that was just maybe just one generation before, or if I had just gotten a break with something else before what I'm doing now, maybe I would have avoided needing to really even be involved with it. I could just enjoy it or not enjoy it and just not think about it. And the second thing was, as I was scrolling yesterday, I think I came across an artist. Like there was this, it's a Dutch girl. She's a singer-songwriter. Her name is Stevie Bill. And she I saw like a little video, a clip of a video of some new song of hers. I'd never heard of her. I'd never heard of this song before, but it caught me. It just, at the right time, at the right place, I heard it. I thought, this is a great song. And I put it on my Spotify, and I've been listening to it. And I thought, okay, that worked for her. That's cool. But imagine like right now, Gen Zers trying to get a name for themselves as like no money, no label artists. And all they want to do is make good, authentic music. But there's no chance that you'll be discovered or appreciated or anything without putting a ton of effort into your social media. So it's like
that's something that always made me very sad. Yeah. Especially like, I don't get this wrong. Like I don't want to pity you there or something. But especially when you were not a social media star, but mainly a musician.
Yeah, totally.
And you really struggled to have like the right content and had talks with the manager about that. And because it sucks. For me, it always felt so sad, because it always feels sad when like people who are good at something are like wasting their time, in my opinion, doing something else instead of like working on what they're good at.
Yeah. I remember like having calls with, I used the term record label really loosely because it was a very strange agreement we had with this record label. But I remember having calls with them, and it would not really be like cool updates. Like they had you know, put my song into some cool playlist, or they had got it into a consideration for, you know, oh, we got it on the table of, you know, this other, like, they didn't, it wasn't a call saying that they had done cool work that I could be excited about. It was them calling to ask if I had brainstormed ideas of how to incorporate my song in TikTok to make it go viral. And I was like, this sucks. I don't enjoy this conversation. I don't want to, like, I feel so bad for these new artists, because even if they do make good stuff, and some good stuff obviously does come through, I still start to feel like I would start to overthink, does this song work for social media? As opposed to, do I think this is a good song? You know what I mean? I feel like they would start, you'd start designing your song to try and put the social media aspect of it in front of the artistic element.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Like all these hooks that are written for like repetition on TikTok.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But what I always wonder, because like it's been like that for, I feel like 10 years. From time to time, I don't know, when talking to musicians or people that have something to do with music, it's always the same. Like people tell you, yeah, it's still like important that you got talent and that you got a hit potential and that you write good songs, but mostly it's working on your presence on social media, etc. And I always wonder, like, is this, surely there is something behind that, and surely that is a big factor for success these days. That's probably just the world we live in, but is this the only way? Is it really like that we've reached a point where you cannot potentially make it just by being a good musician?
That's the thing. I really
because I don't want to believe that.
Well, I don't want that to be the case, and I'm sure there's always some exceptions, but I do worry that, like, that's the thing. You have to have it. You have to incorporate it. So can you really break through without having it at all? You'd have to have some sort of benefit. You'd have to have some sort of old school thing, like having enough money, like maybe a parent who earned enough to kind of get you into the right circles. You know, you'd either have to, you'd have to have gotten an education from one of those cool music schools, or, you know, I bet, like, you probably could still go to like Berklee College of Music and not have Instagram and still make a living, you know, doing a good job. But that's a very small proportion of like the general artistry, like, you know?
A very specific niche, probably.
Yeah.
Because I also, you gave me this book, like the biography of Jeff Tweedy.
Oh, yeah.
A great book. Thanks a lot again. I need to give it back to you. Remember,
did you finish it?
That. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Remind me of that. It's and a good book, right? It's really fun.
It's a really good book. But the one thing I cannot or could not wrap my head around is this, like, different time and space in which that whole plot, like his life, his becoming of a musician, happens. And it's like,
I'm so jealous that I didn't get to live that time, dude.
The 80s, somewhere in the Midwest, in a small town.
Yeah.
And he starts to play the guitar. He decides to start a band. And from what he describes there, like a year later, they're playing shows in front of hundreds of people.
It's crazy.
Just because they're playing at their high school. And I was like, shit, if I came up at my high school with my band and we played, there were like 10 people coming, max.
totally, dude. Absolutely. That's what I meant. Like, there's people who are sort of grandfathered into that success before needing to do social media. And I'm so jealous of that world. I wonder all the time about, you know, a couple, like, especially this record 12 songs, like, I really wonder how that record would have done in a different era, like a different time. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it was meant for like an early 90s, you know, post-grunge sort of songwriter, Stephen Malkmus. I don't know. Maybe not. But
you could have opened for Blind Melon with that.
Yeah. I wonder about that a lot. And it's so cool that for the longest time, that was just kind of, if you had the talent and you were putting in the work, that you, like, that, you know, the cream would rise to the top sort of thing. But now it's so overcrowded And it's so, what do you call it when it's just like flooded? It's like it. There's so many more fish in the sea, meaning that naturally, just based off like statistics, there's a lot more bad fish. Because there's just so many. There's just so much stuff. Like scrolling through TikTok, I'll see, that was also kind of a disappointing thing when I was taking just like a little break from music. When I'd made the decision to just take a pause, it was also coinciding with getting more time on my phone from the social media boost I was having. And I was seeing, by being on it so much, I was seeing like hundreds of artists and bands from like everywhere, from Denmark to Ohio, like so many bands, some of them sounding kind of cool, some of them sounding like crap. And they all, and I was like, oh my God, there's, I think I've just seen 1,000 bands today. And you're like, what would make, what would have made me stand out if I was like starting that fresh right now? And it, nothing really, money, maybe better music video quality, I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's maybe you just brought up one thought for me. That's maybe part of it, why it is like that, why people need to be so present on social media. Because I just want to say, like, by now, and I'm not on social media anymore, but from the time I spent there, I also remember like artists where it's the other way around. I really like their funny approach to social media, but I don't actually like their music.
Right.
I had this, especially with some German bands, but yeah, that's a different thing. But generally, maybe part of it and why you have to do all these things is that, like, the listeners' expectations have risen so much. Like, I don't know. I see this for myself. Like, I've been to a few concerts last year. And after that, I realized, yeah, but do I still go to like small concerts? Do I like just walk into a place in Munich, like Miller or something, and see who's up there and just let it happen and look what's happening? It's, especially since COVID, I feel like, no, it's like, even for myself as a consumer, as a listener, there's this big expectation, and it has to be the big show. It has to be the big artist and the big place. And with special effects, and I don't know.
Yeah, the standards have changed. Yeah.
Just because, also because you can go everywhere and all these artists come everywhere. I mean, I'm going to Scotland this year to see Oasis. That's absolutely crazy if you would have told me that like a few years ago.
I forgot that you're going to go to Scotland to see them. That's crazy.
But like that's one of the biggest things, but also like all these huge superstars, because they can't make a living solely out of records anymore. Yeah. They go on tour more, and maybe that destroys the market for the smaller artists, because all the big ones are all around the world all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, remember that crazy Beyonce tour?
Oh yeah, dude.
That and that gnarly. like Taylor Swift tour, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Taylor, and all, people like Taylor Swift are setting these new expectations for the labels and stuff as well. I mean, good for her. She's, you know, she's an artist and she's making money. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's like these new expectations of, okay, well, she, you know, you need to be an artist aiming towards something like that, like a 200 stadium city sellout tour that's worth $1 billion. And it's just like, that's not realistic for 99.9% of musicians.
Dude, have you ever talked about like this the juggernaut Adele produced or left in Munich for the whole summer?
Oh,
just
my
built
God.
Built her own city, her own stadium, a crazy kind of amusement park around herself. You could do anything, eat her favorite food, drink her favorite drinks, ride her favorite amusement park rides, whatever. It's like crazy.
When did she do that? Was it last summer?
It was last summer, all of August.
That's like nuts, dude.
The concept was Adele, who spent the 2 years before in Las Vegas and just playing at one specific casino, hotel, I'm not sure, but one place in Las Vegas where she had like this deal of, okay, I'm going to stay here for 2 years and play like every other night.
Uh-huh.
And after that, her management urged her to play a tour. And she was like, I don't like that. And then they found a compromise, because her management was like, okay, we're going to find you I noticed because I had to do two pieces about this for Tag Show.
Oh, I'm sure, I'm sure.
And they found they talked to her and convinced her, like, we'll find you this place next to a big airport in the center of Europe, where we build up a huge arena for you, and we're gonna like turn the concept of a tour upside down. You're gonna fly there and stay there, and people from across Europe are gonna come to you, and you'll just stay there for 1 month and play like 10 shows in one place. And that's what she did.
Imagine having that much power where you could say, yeah, that sounds good. I'll just build my own stadium in the center of Europe so everyone comes to me. And they did.
Yeah, they did.
It was, I'm looking at it now. It was started 2nd of August through the 31st of August. 10 stadium shows in Messestadt Riem, Munich, Adele Arena.
Yeah, and like there's nothing. Like the rest of you, it's a parking lot.
It's
they
nuts.
Built the arena.
How much did that cost, man? Couldn't she have booked out? I mean, I guess she needed more space. Like, couldn't she have booked out the Olympic Stadium or like?
Yeah, but she couldn't have rented it for like a whole month because also like there was one weekend where there was Adele playing like in Riem on that parking lot.
Yeah.
And you had Coldplay playing the Olympic Stadium.
Oh, I
because
see.
Like there were other shows there. She could not do that.
Adele in Munich set a world record for the largest temporary outdoor LED video screen, which was 220 meters long. And do you want to guess how much it cost? You probably know because you did pieces
of it. I knew it. I probably forgot it, but it's like, I don't know.
It's gargantuan. 40 like, million euros for the screen.
I wanted to say like 8 or something.
I know, dude. The Munich performances achieved the highest attendance of any concert residency outside of Las Vegas over 10 consecutive dates. It also broke the Billboard box score attendance record. Attendance was over 700,000 people. Woo! My God. Oh, yeah. Audience spending. Oh, my God.
And that's where it's getting interesting.
The residency set the record for the largest total attendance at the Munich Mess. Audience spending brought in more than €500 million for the city. Oh, that's crazy. 20 songs. She performed 20 songs at the Adele Arena in front of a total audience of more than 730,000 people. My God, dude, that's crazy. Now compare that and the Eras tour to finding an artist with 100 followers on TikTok, and you're like,
and I mean that's the thing.
What's the balance
you
here?
Have, especially with these kind of artists, I saw this a lot when I went there to talk to people who just came because I was standing there for 2 nights and just talking to people leaving the concert. We could not shoot on the venue, so we had to stay outside.
You were at the arena,
yeah, but we weren't allowed to shoot within the arena, so we had to stay outside and wait for people to come out. It was kind of weird. And
that is weird.
It was a setting where you had a lot, especially with Adele. I don't want to generalize this, but it has been a setting where you had a lot of like mothers and daughters. Like mothers in their early 40s who discovered Adele like 15 years ago, and now they have teenage daughters and they go to a concert with them. Now think of those teenage girls. Mm-hmm. Their first impressions of a concert is this.
It's
is like
Adele,
this.
Dude.
How should anyone else, any other artist, ever reach that? Like satisfy those customers?
It's unimaginable. It's completely unimaginable. And like she set the Wembley Stadium attendance record with 98,000 people. That's really crazy. And I mean, I'm also thinking about the Eras tour. Like, Efi has a niece I don't know if it's like a step niece. I forget how it works. If it's a cousin or an aunt or something. But anyway, it was basically exactly the setup that you just described. Like a woman, the mom, some family member of Efi's, I don't know if she's late 40s, something like that, 13-year-old daughter. And they came and stayed at our place to go to the Olympic Stadium and see the Eras tour. And there's just an amount, like, I think that was their first concert, you know, the girl. And I'm just thinking about, like, I saw how long it took, like, how excited. I mean, it's sweet that, like, she wanted to go do it so bad. And she, you know about the whole thing with the bracelets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's essentially, like, community-based sort of like language amongst Swifties. Like they have bracelets that they make and they trade them and like make friendships. You collect bracelets. It's also a sweet thing, you know, on paper. But I imagine if that was her first show, and the bracelets thing is like the first community of like fans, so you feel like part of this community with everyone, and everyone's screaming every lyric to every word. If she farts into the microphone, girls are gonna cry, you know. It's for me, that's so crazy, imagining like seeing the Adele thing, and then just trying to think of how would you get started today and even imagine getting anywhere close to that.
Yeah,
you know, I also Chapel Roan, is she someone who kind of broke through? I don't know. I guess she's the closest thing I could imagine, like off the top of my head. But I don't know. She said, I mean, she'd been like doing it for like 15 years, and now it seems like she just broke through. But I don't know. But did she have a head start? Did she have a friend in the business? Sometimes that's how it is.
But because this, like, because we started from the perspective of like. Quotation mark small musicians, and this could sound pretty like bad, like there's nothing you can do, big artists are gonna make it impossible for you to grow and to play live shows that get an attendance, etc. But I feel like there's like I don't know, we have like different classes now. Like you have this top range,
totally,
these kind of artists. And on the other hand, I've been to a show in November. I always had this thing, I know it's probably not your music so much, and I always have these phases where I really grow back into it, of where I need to listen to punk rock.
I can understand that, yeah.
And the thing is, I just found out throughout last year, that there's a big wave of young bands there from the States, from the United Kingdom. And also there's a lot of guys from France. I don't get that, but it's happening. And there's a lot of small bands, and they also do not care so much about their social media, etc.
Right.
And they're playing small venues across Europe. And I went to a show of one of these bands, and it was a band that is like, they were like, I don't know, 500 people.
That's
and they
cool.
had a they brought a support band from like, it was this weird crazy hardcore band from, they came from New York. They were even smaller, and none of them were huge on social media. And I thought, okay, this also works.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's a thing. Like, where they want to go, you're right. Like you're saying, these are classes, right? Like that would be a class goal. Like, can you book your own tour, make enough money to get out of the red? Because you got to think about hotels and travel and food and everything. You know, you can do it raw dog. You can just get into a van with your stinky buddies and sleep in there and not shower and try and do it that way. Or you try and make yourself as comfortable as can be. And if you can just stay in the green and you're happy with that being just, that's my thing, and we'll see if anything changes, but we're really happy with that. That's like a whole different class. And it's also really aspirational, you know?
Yeah.
I think the hard thing is seeing social media and like getting in your head that you should be doing more or should be bigger, and not being just being in your circles and doing what makes you feel good. I think is really underestimated these days.
Yeah,
it's forgotten.
I thought about it a lot, and that's where we like to get back where we started from.
Yeah,
because you can never be quite sure. Like I don't. I want to get back to Trump because one thing
I did not expect to get back to.
True, a little bit unexpected, but one thing, at least I feel like people in Europe learned from his like first stint, is that you better believe what he says, because he's gonna actually do these things. But sometimes he doesn't because he can't for other reasons.
Yeah,
and
like he means to do what he says. He just can't legally always do them because he doesn't understand the legal system.
Like when it was a thing like a few weeks ago, it wasn't necessarily like his project, but he also talked about this in his first stint. And if he comes to the idea, yeah, I don't want to have TikTok in this country. We don't want to have that. We're gonna shut down TikTok tomorrow. This could happen.
Oh yeah.
And I think, okay, what then? Like if you think as a musician, your whole output as an artist is optimized to satisfy an economical need on this specific platform.
Yeah.
And then the mightiest man of the world says, no, we're not going to have that.
Dude, it's terrifying. It's terrifying to think about, like specifically just for the reason you're talking about. Like, that would scare me to death if I was just getting a little growth, like a little more, like slight more attendance at a show because I had posted, you know, some cool cover song videos or clips of a music video or something on this art, you know, small artist channel, and then it gets banned. But I think genuinely that the whole extension of the TikTok ban, you can probably say more. Maybe I'm sounding conspiratorial. I don't know. If so, please tell me. But I think that it's a stint to make Trump look good.
Mm-hmm.
And if the ban, he can extend it because he's buds with Mr. TikTok. And I think one of two things is going to happen. Either one, they will ban it, and then they're going to just be like, well, look, Trump extended it for you. He tried his best. He's a good guy. And he'd try and kind of convince those like red pilled young men who are like, see, he can help us out too. It's either going to be that or Zuck's going to buy it. And it's going to be one of the biggest deals ever made. And it's going to be under Trump's term. And he's going to take responsibility and claim for it and say, like, see what we can do? See how much we can help each other? And I think it's going to be one of those two things. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think this doesn't sound too.
I don't think it's that crazy to imagine that Zuck might buy it.
That's pretty realistic.
Or Musk. Musk could totally just buy it. He's the richest person on the planet. And yeah, then like, it'll make Trump look really good. That's all they want, is just to make him look good, you know.
I'm not sure who could buy it, and I'm interested in what will happen in that Musk-Trump relationship, just because.
Oh my God!
I think there could come a point where Trump sees him as a danger for his.
I don't know. Do you think he will? He just gave him access to like the Social Security database and stuff. He's just giving him whatever he wants. It's crazy.
That's the one thing I actually do not get at all, because they're not, I don't know, they're not always like on the same page, I feel. And they're both so, like, the most used word probably is disruptive.
Oh, totally.
People.
Yeah.
And
it's
I'm
a
not
very
sure
respectful term
how this,
that nails it. Yeah,
how this is gonna work? But yeah, but the idea generally that TikTok's falls to Musk or Zuckerberg, I'm not sure. Like, maybe China has a problem with that and doesn't want to have that. But I'm not so sure about that. But I'm more interested in what will happen in Europe after this.
Me too, man.
After Zuckerberg announced that they're basically gonna kill fact checking and.
Right.
Gonna. They basically. He just basically said, as far as I got it, we're gonna turn into X.
I really don't know. I can't even finish the sentence. Like, I don't understand the benefit of that. I don't. Like, from his perspective, does it just save him a ton of money to not have some fact check AI or small tech group that's already part of his enormous company just to, like, just check that, like, oh, if they say that the president died, that there's a person who goes like, well, that's not true. You know, I don't understand the benefit. It feels like such a random thing. I don't know. It just kind of feels like we're going to say, now we're going to start hitting mailboxes with baseball bats. Why? But why, though?
To be liked by Trump.
Yeah. I guess it is probably that simple.
And that's a thing I find creepy. You have all these super rich, super mighty CEOs who just fall like on their knees and praise Trump.
Oh, dude.
Obviously, yeah. Like, he's gonna make them richer. They're gonna earn a lot of money on the domestic market in the United States. But I'm not so sure if that's, I don't know, in the long term. Such a good idea, and I'm really interested in how the European Union will react to these things Zuckerberg announced, like no fact checking and some changes to the algorithms, etc. Because I don't know, many, especially like Trump, he sees Europe as weak, and there are arguments for that. But politically, the European Union from time to time like does things you. You did not estimate before, and I think this could be such a moment. Like the most recent example has been Apple. Like, Europe just told Apple, biggest tech company in the world, you're not going to sell iPhones or other devices with Lightning ports anymore. Right. Because everyone else is using USB-C.
Yeah.
We just want to have these cables to save a lot of waste, etc.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that anymore. And it worked. I didn't believe it at first because, like, why should Apple care?
Yeah.
But actually, like, they won't sell any new iPhones with Lightning ports.
Yeah.
From now on, they only sell iPhones with USB-C.
Yeah.
And I'm interested whether the same thing will happen with Meta.
Mm.
Like, if Europe is strong enough to tell Zuckerberg, like, yeah, okay, it's do your thing over there.
Right, right.
Let people kill each other on social media about things that are far off reality.
Yeah.
But we're not going to have it.
I'm curious, too. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out. Because, I mean, honestly, everything that happens there slowly bleeds over, like, into Europe, like, over time.
Yeah.
And I think in addition to that, like you said, but that's a good example with the USB-C. I'm really curious how those lines will be protected when it comes to, like, Germany or whatever. But also, what if he just, like, drops tariff bombs on Europe as well? I mean, if he's going to do it to Canada... Mm. For no reason. I never saw Justin Trudeau so fired up.
That's crazy. Did you see these pictures from supermarkets? Like where the Jack Daniels used to be, and now there's just a piece of paper on the shelf, like rather buy Canadian products.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Wow. That's so crazy, man. Yeah, I've never seen Canadians so lit up, you know, and still eloquent and well spoken and clear and decisive. it's a crazy. Oh, it's such a crazy
dude,
world
since,
right
since,
now.
Since, I'm a basketball fan, because like the NBA and the NHL have teams in Canada, and fans there. I saw it like with the Toronto Raptors, Canadian basketball ice hockey fans. Started booing the American anthem
before games. I saw that. I feel bad for that singer.
Yeah, true.
I feel bad for the singer. I'm sure she didn't plan to be booed. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I would never think in a million years that we would get, the Americans over there who voted for Trump, would get Canadians... so mad. It's just like the longest wasn't this like the longest peaceful trade agreement in at least in American legislature or something like that? Just a slightly changed topic. I wanted to ask you, since you work full-time in real news, like I don't mean it like this, what I'm about to say, that sounded like the wrong thing. You're working in like your particular lane of journalism now that we've been talking about, but you used to be like full-time sports journalism.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Luca?
What? Whoa. This is the first time ever you're starting a basketball conversation with me.
And dude, I'm such...
Did you just look up his name again?
I wanted to make sure that I spelled it right to get the article up. Yeah, I know that it is a big uproar in the NBA world right now, and I wanted to get for those listening who are not so into sports, we're not going to go into like crazy details here. I'm also not deeply versed in sports language, especially these days, but there are, I mean, I'm not, it's not even like a hot take that there's two players that besides LeBron right now that I'm interested in. One was Luka and Nikola. And I'm just really, they're just so fun to watch. And I just, because of TikTok, saw all these uproarious responses to this trade. Can you give me, in layman's terms, a simple breakdown of what he had promised or said he was going to do and now what the aftermath is?
Okay, first of all, this finally gives me the opportunity to congratulate you on your head. Like, Jordan is wearing a 1992 NBA Finals head. Do you know who played back then?
92, I think that was pre-Bulls, right? Was this a Raptors year or a Lakers
year?
No,
it was... Like, Bulls played.
Bulls did play 92. I thought their championship started in 93. I guess they did play 92, but I don't know who they played against.
They played against Portland, I think. Drexler. Drexler versus Jordan, wasn't it, Dad? I gotta look that up later. But to talk about Luka, I gotta say, this year I'm not following so much, but I had to read as much as I could about this because it is a crazy it is a crazy trade.
Tell people, so what team was he on, and what was the, like, when there was a trade coming in the rumors, what was the promises he made?
So the story is like Luka Doncic, he's a player from Europe, from Slovenia, who had an early upbringing in basketball of the highest level. Like, he played European top league, which you could compare to like college level in the US, and led his team Real Madrid to a championship there at 16 years old. Whoa. Came into the NBA pretty young, and he ended up in Dallas, where he was supposed to be the new big figure. Like, before him, especially a lot of people from Germany have kind of a connection to Dallas because Dirk Nowitzki is like the icon, brought them their only championship, etc.
Right.
And he should be, like, they played together the last year of Dirk's career, and he should be, like, his successor, the next big figure there to lead them to future success. And he's a crazy player. Like, because you named him and also Nikola Jokic, like, right now there's, like, two players, Jokic from Serbia, Doncic from Slovenia, like, from the Balkan region, who are very dominant in this league.
Dude, and so it's really mind-blowing to watch.
And they also, but from time to time, they both, like, Nikola, not so much anymore, but they both, like, make headlines for, there are stories that they do not have this, like, crazy work ethic and attitude, and that they're just more like funny and loose guy and don't care if they, I don't know, eat a cheeseburger more or less, and like,
yeah,
this kind of attitude. And there have been these jokes like, yeah, imagine being a poor kid, probably a poor black kid from the States, and making it through very tough circumstances and playing all your way through high school, college, getting drafted just to get your ass beaten up by some overweight guy from Serbia or Slovenia who doesn't even care.
Like, just a quick side note, the Nikola Jokic interviews are just, like, lick your fingers, delicious, gold. Like, it's so funny. It's this guy, he's clunky, he runs weird, he's not fit.
He doesn't look like a pro athlete.
He does not look at anything. He looks like he works on cars, dude. Looks like a mechanic, and he's just this rough-looking dude. He's super tall, and he's so dominant. He's cranking in, like, 26 to 36 points a game, dude.
Yeah.
He's, like, MVP all the time. And he, his interviews are so funny because to be that good, to be that top level, you expect him in the interviews to be excited. Like, he made a nearly full court shot at the buzzer. For those who don't know, that's basically impossible to do. And he threw a ball almost across the entire basketball court, and it went in, no, just like swish at the buzzer, winning the game. And he just, like, kind of, with no expression, no smile, just like high-fived a few players, didn't even jump around. And then the interviewer came back and was like, so what does it feel like to have won a full court shot at the buzzer and winning the game? And he goes, oh, well, now it's time to go home. Or whatever. Yeah. Something like that. Like, yeah, good, we made points. No, we did our job. You know,
like, we reached a point where I feel like a lot of American fans were actually fucked up by how he treats this, because he has this attitude of like,
I love it so much.
Like, basketball's my day job. That's like his attitude. But that's Jokic. On the other hand, you have Doncic, who's like kind of has the same vibe. And I don't know. I remember one time where he's on a show with Charles Barkley and people like that. And I think it was Charles Barkley who asked him on like his longevity and like how long he wants to play and how long he can perform on this level. And Luka's just like, playing for another 15 years? No, I want to be back on my farm in Slovenia. I don't see that.
Yeah.
So this is like the attitude. And he's also a very dominant player. And this trade has been...
yeah, he can make his millions and then go be in peace.
This trade has been pretty crazy. First of all, because nobody did see it coming. And usually... you have like these insiders and these other like CEOs and general managers of organizations that have, you have this crazy like information network, and well-informed people around this league know month in advance what's going to happen with these free agent, with just with trades, etc. Like who's gonna play for who, for what kind of money?
Yeah,
people know that usually. I just read a very interesting text by The Athletic, where one of these insiders, he basically just collected texts from general managers from all across the leagues about this trade, and everyone's like, "No, didn't see that coming. Heard nothing, did not see
that
coming."
That's wild, dude.
The
That's
players
wild.
Himself, like we mainly talk about Luka Doncic, who moved from the Dallas Mavericks to the Los Angeles Lakers, a team many people even beyond basketball know.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Anthony Davis, also very different player, big man, also dominant player, but he's over 30 already. So he's not as much an investment into the future as Luka Doncic, who's 25 and already such a dominant player.
Yeah.
He was like second or third in last year's MVP race. So he's like one of the faces of the league. And the players and their agents were not really informed, as far as I got it. It was just the general manager of Dallas and the one of Los Angeles making this deal happen very quick.
That's
and I
nuts,
still haven't
dude.
Got anything around it. There's also a German player part of it, Maxi Kleber. He's transferred also to Los Angeles now.
Uh-huh.
But that's not so, he's not so important compared to the other players. And yeah, like, I mean, generally, the Dallas Mavericks, they have a new owner. Like, they used to be owned pretty successfully because he gave the team a lot what it needed by a lot of people. A lot of people know him, Mark Cuban.
Uh-huh.
A lot of,
oh, yeah.
Because of his like television things and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people think I don't. Mark Cuban used to own the Dallas Mavericks up until last year, I think. And now they have a new owner and probably new plans and new forms of an investment. And in basketball, because there are very strict rules around like how much money you can spend on your roster, how much money you can give out for contracts, etc.
That makes sense, yeah.
And it's always a kind of a gamble on like what period of time are we planning on? Are we are we planning a team that should be competitive right now and bring us a championship this year or next year, or are we building a squad that is dominant in like 3 to 4 years from now, etc.
Right, slowly.
And basically,
building up,
to break it down, because it gets pretty complex there.
Yeah, it's really there's sports, dude. It's like high level calculus. I see it more and more as I'm getting older. I'm still so undereducated on it, but you see like the strategy. It's like chess. It's like the highest level chess. Sometimes it's really crazy.
Like to break it down as simple as I can from what I know by now, the Dallas changed their trajectory from this like longer term project, and everything is built around Luka. They would have had to give him a new contract next year, and he would be eligible for the new max contract, which is crazy money, $345 million. So God. that's like
over a quarter bill. Oh
yeah.
My God.
And they changed their trajectory from we wanna go that way around Luka longer term to we bring in a superstar that gives us more defensive stability, because that's something Luka doesn't have that much. Right now, that brings us in a position to win, to compete for a title from now up until 3 years, and then probably do kind of a rebuild and be competitive like again like 10 years from now. They basically...
That's nuts, dude.
The Dallas radically changed their goals. And to do that, they have to give up a big asset and gave up their biggest asset.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, Los Angeles Lakers, who didn't... like, they have LeBron James, who's like 40 years old and still plays stats that other players in their prime with in their late 20s cannot bring to the table, which is crazy. But again, he's 40 years old and they do not have a natural like successor for him to lead the team after he will be gone next year or the year after.
Yeah,
and
he's got to be gone soon, man. That's he's
Dallas made a very
something.
Wild move, and Los Angeles saw an opportunity to get a superstar who also probably will be a superstar 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, for Los Angeles, it was a no-brainer, basically. Yeah.
Dude, what? So just, two guys meeting at a cafe, sipping on some nitro coffee or whatever, and chatting about, you know, quarter bill deals.
I would be very interested if he had that kind of analytics, like how many listeners we just lost or gained through that part, because I'm not sure if there are so many like sports enthusiasts,
especially for American basketball here. there's a lot here, but there's definitely less people probably listening to this that are interested. But I wanted to ask, what year were you born again?
98.
90. Okay, yeah, you're 20. Okay, so I just wanted to say this. Is this? I forgot if you're 25 or 26. I was just looking at. We'll stop with this. I was looking at Luca's stats on ESPN.com.
Jordan.
Very unlike me, dude. If I start getting into sports gambling, you better come slap me in the face. Mm-hmm. Terrifies me. But anyway,
do not start sports betting. That's the most important take on our sports segment. Do not start gambling around sporting events.
Never. I'm so glad I never found gambling interesting. It's like I'm so bad with money as it is. Why would I want to just throw it in the trash? But I was looking at Luca's stats and I was like, okay, born 99, so he's just about Mo's age. 6'6" and 230 pounds. Let me put that into centimeters here. Let's see. 6'6". Six.
It's like
in centimeters. One. That is 198 centimeters.
Yeah,
which is very, very, very tall. And then 230 pounds to kg. So he's 104 kilograms and 198 centimeters. And it was just funny to look at that for a second and go, "Huh, he's Mo's age," and he is the largest human being I could probably imagine standing next to.
Dude, have you seen, there's a new phenomenon in the NBA since last year. Have you ever checked pictures of Victor Wembanyama?
No, I don't even know that name, I think. Victor...
You can also just look
I put in Vic and it was the first thing to come up. Oh, dude, of course, yeah. I saw clips of him on TikTok, surprise. Dude, they call him the alien? That's so mean.
Like he's a huge player, but he also has like the skills of a small player.
Dude, but his kind of body structure terrifies. He's only 21. Damn, he's 7'3", and he's 200. He's heavier than Luca, but he looks like toothpicks. Like he's glued together with toothpicks. That kind of body structure scares me, dude. It looks like he's so frail that like he could just get snapped.
Yeah, I also like when I see him play. Like every play, I fear that just his arms will fall off or something.
Yeah, you see him lift a ball. It's like in slow motion. It's like it's giving Yao Ming, but Yao Ming was also a little heavier.
Yeah,
he had that early bulkier. 2000s, late 90s chunk on him that this guy does not have. He's so skinny. Holy crap, Wembanyama! Wembanyama! What a cool name, Wembanyama. Cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, we can leave sports. I had to ask about that when I had you, because maybe we won't get to chat again for another week or so. And I really wanted to know. But that's like, I think that kind of stuff is really in, like, I'm not big into keeping up with consistent sports stats. Like I'm a very casual viewer. I love going to a live game. If you ever go to like Bayern basketball, please let's just book a day and go. It'd be so much fun. I can really get into it, like have a few beers, cheer on a team. Like that is really super
fun. Watch Skispringen in Oberstdorf around Christmas.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That might be the one sport I don't find interesting. I can see like sport, like ski jumping is so funny and Oberstdorf because you literally like see it out the window. But then on the TV, it is impressive how far they go. I think what I'm trying to say is that with any sport, the one element that I always find the most fascinating is like the drama that takes place before the athlete shows their skill.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I love watching sports, but for me, it's like, cool, you're good at doing, like you're good at dribbling, you're good at defending, you're good at rebounding, you're good at shooting. Cool, go do those things. And it's like, that's fun. But the drama, the stuff, the juice is like a deal like this. Oh, you have two managers meeting at a coffee shop in secret, making one of the biggest, unfathomable, like big money deals in NBA history. That's exciting. Oh, a ski jumper. I'm not really interested in that. Oh, but a lot of them starve themselves and they have crazy coaches that put them on these medicines. That's fascinating. Oh, Lance Armstrong is like a cancer survivor that's really good at cycling. That's good. Good for him. Oh, he's been doping for 15 years. That's fascinating. See, all that stuff to me is like, I'll watch any sports doc if there's juice.
Yeah.
You know?
You need the build up. You know these ESPN documentaries? They're all on Disney Plus in Europe, so you can watch them there. These 30 for 30.
Dude, 30 for 30. Yeah, I've seen those in the States before, like when they come on ESPN. Those are really good.
But yeah, like that makes a lot. I mean, that's also something like that Netflix just discovered, who are really investing in like sports documentaries ever since they did that thing with Formula One, etc.
Oh,
because you can make a lot out of these stories.
Totally.
And also with live sports, I mean, at the Olympics this summer, there's, I'm not sure, is it pole vault in English? Like
yeah.
Where they jump really high with the stick, pole vault, yeah.
Yeah.
There's an athlete from Sweden, Armand Duplantis, and he's like ridiculously good. Like he jumps like feet higher than everybody else. Like he humiliates all the other athletes in every competition. And that's the whole thing. People are so fascinated just when he walks into the arena, because before he even, and this is, I would take
out dude,
this
he's sport. From Lafayette, Louisiana.
Duplantis?
Yeah.
Yeah?
He's Swedish-American.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
But that's crazy. Sorry. He was born in Lafayette, Louisiana. Maybe he moved. No, he went to Lafayette High School.
Hey!
A Swedish-American. Okay, so he has
you can
like
cheer for him.
parents. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and he's like so good that he destroys all his opponents in a sport that is not so fascinating to watch, because all that happens is like a few seconds.
Yeah.
It's like people running a few steps, jumping, done. Obviously, humans have this fascination for like who's going to be better. But
yeah.
For him, like it's the build-up. It's like he walks into an arena, everyone is in the stands like, how high will he set a new world record today? Like, how close will the second place come?
Right.
And
right.
It's all of this story, and he has this aura. And so I get that. Yeah, that's a big part of sports. Like these stories around it.
Yeah, when there's like a figurehead that brings excitement or change or just like, you know, switches up the routine of it, then you can really get invested. Like it's easy to say that for, like, for example, if we talk about basketball, I can go big gaps and not really think much about it, but then you have, you know, like something with LeBron, I'm like, oh, that's okay, let's check it back in. Or like Nikola, oh, there's this funny Serbian guy who doesn't care, that's fun. You gotta get into the mix. Oh, he's the best player in the game right now. And again, with like Duplantis here, you can see he's like two-time Olympic champion and like world record holder. Oh my God, 20 feet 6.5 inches. He did like 6.26 meters. Wow, that's insane. Yeah, that's crazy.
But
even if you see stuff like that, you just get so jazzed.
To find a smooth way out of our sports segment.
Yeah, sorry guys.
And get back into something cultural. I read a book last year by a great American author. I don't know if you know him, Richard Ford.
Richard Ford.
He won a Pulitzer for his book Independence Day, which has nothing to do with the Alien movie.
Oh, okay.
And I read the first of the Independence Day. It's a series, and I read the first book, and it's called The Sports Writer. It's not really so much about sports. Like it's a drama about this man who happens to be a sports writer, and he's also divorced and already lost a child. So it's a drama around this guy, but he like tells us his story of how he became a sports writer, because originally he's a novelist.
Yeah,
like a failed novelist, and to earn money he chose to become a sports writer, and he tells us what he likes about this, because he's also not like a sports maniac per se, and he has such a, like the author and the figure in that book has such a brilliant view on all these stories that happen around sports. It's a great novel.
Dude, this looks really
generally.
Cool.
The sports
yeah, I'm just
writer.
Reading some of the things here that you're talking about. This looks awesome.
Richard Ford. I have it. I also have the Independence Day. We can make an exchange. I give you back your
yeah,
Jeff Tweedy
yeah.
book.
If you suggest this, when we get back Jeff Tweedy, bring that and I'll read that and we can talk about it.
We could start a book club, Artsy Fartsy Book Club.
Dude, an Artsy Fartsy Book Club would be so much fun, honestly, and it would encourage me to keep reading. Where is my book that I was trying to finish, but I haven't been able to? I think obviously it's not where it should be, at my desk. I think it might be Tom Segura's autobiography. Like, I keep getting to like a midpoint on it, and it's not because it's not still funny or interesting, mm-hmm. but I just get distracted, and then I sit it down, and then it's like, oh my God, it's been a month and I have not finished this book. What the hell? I have to do it. I was just seeing here in 2007, HBO announced that it was adapting these Richard Ford books into a mm-hmm. 6-hour HBO miniseries, but HBO subsequently dropped their option, and any future plans to adapt the novels for the screen have been shelved. That's a shame.
That's a shame, yeah.
That could be cool. That could be something pretty cool out of that, I'm very sure. Well, brother, I think on that note, I have to wrap it up here.
That's okay.
But I would just say, okay, yeah, but I would just say once again, thank you very much. I was making notes here of our topics to put into the show notes.
And wild ride today.
we fit quite a roller coaster, like jumping right into like Trump and then Jeff Tweedy and then Adele Munich Stadium and then Musk and then Disruptive Musk and then Luka Doncic, and then the Netflix dramas and Richard Ford. It's been quite a ride today, so I hope you guys had some fun. We kept you on your toes, I assume. We can talk later about if it works for you again next week. I love the chit chat, man. This is really fun, and I know the listeners like having you on too. So if it works, that'd be really cool.
Yes, sir.
But we can plan it out.
And think about that book club idea. I just met people in real life. For the first time, I met people who actually are participating in book clubs. And it sounds pretty fun.
I used to think it was kind of cheesier, like for old women. But then I also have a couple of people, you know, the old Brits that I hung out with back in the day. They and some of their friends, I don't know if they're still doing it, because we're not so close anymore, but they had a book club, as far as I knew, for a few years. And I would sometimes see what the books were. And sometimes it was interesting, and sometimes I was like, I'm really glad I'm not in this book club, dude. I would never read this kind of book. I mean, it was just occasionally something just so uninteresting to me, like some, you know, high concept, like 1800s romance in like England or something. And it's just like, dude, I don't... Something like Pride and Prejudice. I'm like, yeah, it's a classic, but... Oh. You know?
I mean, we could make it specific for your field, like a book like for only like, I don't know, old German tales. you've been pretty successful with content around that so far.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I should always try and open my horizons for more inspiration for the content. That's true. I took our little opportunity today and shot a little video before we started. So it's finally, I'm glad it's off my plate. It's done. It's edited. And now I can maybe not be on my phone for the next 20 hours. But dude, this was so much fun. And guys, thank you so much for listening. And yeah, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.